I tell people, if you want to get into a partnership, there's a couple of things you need to know. 50-50 partnerships are the most likely to break up because it's almost never going to be 50-50 separation of responsibilities. If one person's bringing the money, one person doing all the work, eventually that person doing all the work is going to eventually say, I'm done with this guy because I can find the money somewhere else.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm here with my friend, Michael Pinter. He's out of New York. He's been full-time in the real estate industry since 2013. He buys and holds, and that's been a big part of his business here in this year, and fix and flip, does wholesale. And we're going to get into all the details of what he's done and what he's been through and where he's going right now. Michael, how are you, my friend?
I am great. It's good to talk to you, Neil.
It's good to see you. It's been a while since we've known each other for years, but it's been a while since we've seen each other. So I'm glad to catch up here. Yeah. Likewise. Hey, let's just start here. I mean, everybody, you've been in the business for a while, since 2013. How'd you get into the industry?
So before 2013, I was working in the mortgage business for 17 years for the same company.
Okay.
And in 2013, I finally left. I was in the mortgage business for 17 years. And it was good for about 11 years. And then everything hit the fan in 2008 and 2009. Right. I should have left then, but I stuck it out and I created some ancillary businesses where I was supporting people in the mortgage industry, but I was also dabbling in real estate. So I had bought some investment properties back in 2004 and 2012, really, I was doing both. I was sort of running this mortgage related company and part-timing in real estate. In 2013, I realized that real estate is really where I want to go. I hated the regulation of the mortgage business. I like the lack of regulation in our industry. And I was, all in 2013.
So the bulk of your years in the mortgage business were spent doing what?
So I did everything in the mortgage business. I started out as like a loan officer. I became a branch manager. After a while, I worked for a company that didn't have an FHA department. I started an FHA department there. I started a reverse mortgage department. Then I started working in secondary marketing. So I started selling the loans off in the secondary market after we made the loans to, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all the major buyers out there. And I was, I worked in almost every department in a mortgage company I worked in over the years.
You've done it. Yeah. And so what do you like best? You say, the regulatory. And I think when you say that, what I hear is highly restrictive. And some of the benefit in this business is that you can get creative, come up with creative solutions to whatever the challenge may be.
Sure.
That's almost how I interpret what you said.
Well, I was in the business really during the whole run-up and then the crash after. And my company was the first or second non-bank entity, right? Because we were a mortgage bank that got audited by the CFPB, the brand new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which it just created in 2009 or 10.
Right.
Yep. And when I sat through that audit, it was, my brain almost exploded. I mean, they were not interested in anything that made common sense. They just wanted us to hire more people and hire outside auditors and then hire more people to audit the outside auditors. And these were guys who were just hired. They didn't really know what they're doing, but they knew that what their mission was just to create a lot more crap. And to me, it just made me want to throw up. And when I got into first of all, working for myself, which was great. I liked that. But when I got into the real estate business, the idea that, so I list something and then I'm sort of bound by the rules of the rules that a licensed realtor is bound by. But when you're just buying something and selling it, there really is no regulation to it. I was very, very drawn to something that had limited regulation to it.
Yeah. I want to touch on one thing. You know, when the regulators came in, it seemed to me, and this is what I hear from other people who've gone through a similar experience, been in the mortgage business, moved over, is that they really were looking to increase the amount of hurdles in which smaller places would have to jump through or jump over in order for them to fold up, roll up, whatever. Largely, it was a concentration of power because at some point it became so cost prohibitive for a small shop to comply to all these things. You just couldn't be in business.
It was very difficult. They didn't really know what they were doing. And they just said, you have to hire somebody doing that. And we said, well, it's already being done. And they said, well, hire somebody else. And then they had just created new regulations about how loan officers were compensated. And we had followed those. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you're following the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. We want you to change a bunch of things. And it was, they basically wanted us to change the whole business. And it was a huge, to me, it probably was a turning point of when I started to leave when I sat through that audit. And it was a crazy time to be in a business that's right. And I understand that things went crazy in 2006 and 2007, but the pendulum swung way too far the other way.
Very hard. I couldn't take it anymore. All right. So you get into real estate. What aspect, how did you enter into the industry? What did you start doing?
So I had a partner who raised a lot of private money, and we were going to my local county's foreclosure auctions every Tuesday. And we were just buying properties and gut renovating them, you know, just fixing and flipping them. That's what we were doing. So we were buying as many as we could, or as many as we could afford. And that's what we were doing. For 4 years, really, I went to the auction every single Tuesday. And for 4 years, I gut renovated every single house. And that's how I looked at it. I wanted to be Tariq El Moussa from Flip or Flop. That was my dream.
Yeah.
Everything I wanted to do was open concept and all the crap that I saw on HGTV.
Right.
And that's really what I did for the first 4 years.
Okay. Then how did it work out?
So it was good. We made more money every year. But after 4 years, I finally learned what I should have learned really quickly. And that was that, A, if you're buying at auction, whether it's online auction or live auction, you can't really get the best price because you're competing with a lot of other people.
Right.
And I learned that was the first thing I learned. So I wanted to, I switched to going direct to seller and started marketing direct to sellers.
Yep.
The second thing I realized was that I don't really have to be Tariq El Moussa. And what I can do is a lot less work to a property and not sell it at the top of the market, but still make a lot more money by doing a lot less work. And that's really been my motto over the last 6 years is do as little as possible to make a decent profit instead of thinking, you know, what else can I do in this house? I really think of what can I not do in this house?
Yeah. The idea being do as little as you can and make a profit and move on. Just keep the deals spinning versus do as much as you can make as much as you can, because that you'd agree with me. I think the longer you sit in that home, the more you spend, the worse that thing becomes. Your contractors get stale. The personality changes. I know my guys, when they're in a home, there's only so many weeks they can be in the same home, and the personality, it's all of a sudden now they went from like, this is great and we got to win, to this is absolutely depressing to keep coming back to this house because there is not enough progress. Those guys need to see that loop close in a so many week fashion.
Yeah. That is absolutely the case. I find that whenever you're in a property for longer, things start going bad. We got up to a point where I think I had like 16 or 17 rehabs going on at the same time. And I wanted to blow my own brains out because it's hard to manage a lot of different contractors. I had materials going to the wrong place. And that was also right about the time when I spoke to, you know, Brad Chandler from Express Home Buyers.
Yes.
And he sort of explained to me that, you got to start wholesaling. And I'd always thought wholesalers were like knuckle dragging Neanderthals who came in and sort of got a tiny bit of profit from these incredibly sophisticated rehabbers. And I didn't really understand it. And then when he sort of explained to me, I realized that if I'm going to direct to seller, I can buy it cheap enough that I can then make a quick profit, sell a property to a rehabber. And I remember the first time I did that, and it was just like a light bulb moment for me, because in general, all these properties that I had done before that, when a deal closed, really the clock starts ticking, right? I'm paying interest. I'm paying taxes. Taxes here are very expensive, very common, over $1,000 a month in taxes.
Yep.
Every time it snows here, I have to worry about which properties we own that I got to shovel. Every time spring comes, I got to worry about somebody cutting the grass. So every time we close on something,
insurance is really running.
Like,
yep.
It was a burden. But when I wholesaled it and we closed and I got paid the next day, I just felt amazing. Like, this is something where there's no clock anymore. I'm getting paid. I'm probably getting paid less than I would have made if I would have gone through the whole process, but it's over. I got paid, and that was an amazing thing. And if I could wholesale every property, I would. I can't wholesale every property because I can't always get it cheap enough.
Correct.
Also, sometimes my plan is to wholesale it. But from what I see, and people say, well, you're crazy, you're leaving all this money on the table. But from a scalability of a business standpoint, I could scale a wholesale business. I could do a lot more deals. Right. But on rehabbing, I've gotten to that point where I realized there is a ceiling. Unless you have, you know, 20 sets of amazing contractors, which I haven't found in my area
yet. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. But first, a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place, batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batchleads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month.
Yeah, it requires a very different build out and model to make it go at scale when it comes to fixing and flipping. But you're right, from a wholesale standpoint, it doesn't require that. So what's your business model look like today? You do a little of everything. I guess walk me through, and how do you make decisions on what goes in what bucket?
Sure. So again, I would wholesale everything. So almost every property that I buy, I probably throw out to my list. Now, I'm buying a lot of properties now that are occupied with non-cooperative tenants. So this is a crazy eviction moratorium still going on in New York. It's been going on since March when COVID started. It's supposed to end January 15th, but it might get extended. I don't know. So in situation, so I have bought properties. I have gone into contract on properties that have non-cooperative tenants and wholesaled them. The price was right in areas, but very often a lot of the rehabbers don't want to buy them with non-cooperative tenants or any tenants for that matter.
Right. They want to go to work. Right.
So I usually throw a property out to my list and see what I get and then make a decision. So I have a property now, ironically, where I threw it out to my list and I got more than what I asked for. But as I think about it more, it really does need a lot of work. So I'm probably going to close on it and do some minor renovations to it. If a property needs major work, which I define really as over $80,000 to $100,000 or more, then I'm going to seriously consider whether I want to get into it for a few reasons, right? First of all, it takes a long time here dealing with, I have like 27 different municipalities I have to deal with. I have little villages and towns and cities. So just getting a permit to do work can take months and months. So that's just a property sitting there, you know, costing me money that I can't do anything with. So if I really need major permitting and it needs major renovations, I really try to wholesale it. If it needs minimal work, so I consider like a wholetail, maybe under $10,000 worth of work, sometimes just a clean out, sometimes nothing. And that is my best use of it. And as I can get more money out of that, out of wholesaling it, sometimes I'll close on it and I'll wholetail it.
Yep.
But in general, I'm trying to wholesale everything. But there are times where I go into a deal where I know the price I'm paying. There's a big enough spread that I can make money if I wholetail it. But it's too much. It's too high for other rehabbers to pay. So I won't even bother sticking it out to my list.
Sure.
So I'd say about half the properties I go into contract on, I assign the contract.
Yep.
And half of them I close on and either wholetail them or do some kind of more extensive renovation.
And then what for you're having some buy and holds, right? You've got a portfolio that you're working on.
I do have some. Yeah. So listen, most of my buy and holds right now are not by choice, right? They're there because I can't sell them because they got a tenant in them.
Because you got a tenant in, they're temporary buy and holds.
Right. So I probably have 9 properties right now that I got to get a tenant out. I'm trying to buy them out. I'm trying to evict them, whatever I can do, hopefully after January 15th. I do have a 7-family that I held on to for a while that I rent. I had a few 3-families that I got rid of recently because the prices were just astronomical.
Sure.
But I do look, I'm sort of almost in contract on a 4-family and another 3-family that I'm trying to buy now.
Okay.
So if it's something in my area, the single families are not cash flow positive, right? Because of the price point and the debt service that comes with that.
Correct.
And the taxes, it just doesn't make sense. But on a multifamily, 2, 3, or 4 units, it can be a good deal. So I look out for those. And if they come up, then I'll buy them and hold them.
Yeah. Your single family is really, for the audience's sake, what part of New York are you in?
So I'm in Long Island. I'm in the suburbs of New York City, Nassau and Suffolk County. So that's just Long Island, New York.
Long Island. Yeah. Then what I heard you say is that the prices on single families have been run up such that even with an increase in rent rates, it doesn't quite match the debt service that's required because of the pricing is really appreciated at such a substantial pace right now.
Very hard to find a single family that's cash flow
positive. Yeah. No, understand that. All right. So looking forward to next year, what's that look like? What's the goal?
So 2022 looks great because I got all these properties that hopefully I'm going to sell 2022 and make money on.
Well, especially if you've got 9 and you get tenants out and the way the prices continue to appreciate.
Right.
Right.
And then I have a bunch more in contract. So I have a bunch of the contract process to New York really is different than anywhere else. It takes a very long time. Every seller is represented by an attorney. I need an attorney. It's not uncommon that even on a wholesale deal, there'll be 4 sets of attorneys there. So there'll be the seller's attorney, my attorney, buyer's attorney. And if he's getting a hard money loan, there'll be a lender's attorney there too. So all these attorneys are all making a couple $1,000s and they all do their best to drag these things out because they want to earn their exorbitant fees. So the process takes a long time. My biggest bucket right now are properties where the seller said yes to me that are not in contract, because that can take, it can take months. So everything takes forever. And I had a partner as right before COVID. We broke up right before COVID in February, and COVID really shut everything down here for about 5 months. I'd say March, April, May, June, July, maybe even 6 months. Nothing was going on. I couldn't market for deals. People here were like terrified, thought I was crazy, and you couldn't sell properties. I had 16 properties that I co-owned with my partner that we couldn't sell either, because nobody was leaving their house.
Right.
But eventually we sold them all, thank God. And but for me, I really had to start from scratch, I'd say last September. So started marketing and moving on. So I don't know if you know Gary Harper, right?
I do.
From Sharper Solutions.
So Gary knew Gary well.
Yep. He has something that he calls a cash conversion cycle, a CCC. And it's the time between when you spend money on marketing and when you actually see
get it back. Right.
So I've been trying to analyze that. I think it's like 14 or 15 months between, on average, when I spend money on marketing, when I see the results. So I just started marketing really 15 months ago. Yep. So it wasn't a terrible 2021. Closed about 40 something deals, but 2022 is looking really good. So I track a lot of numbers. The most important number I think I track is how many offers I'm making per month and by each lead channel. I'm looking at it behind your screen right now. Yeah. And I'm making more offers this month, December. I made more offers than ever before.
Wow.
The leads are coming in. The appointments are great. So those things I know lead to deals coming forward. So, and I have a pipeline of these houses that I got to get tenants out and then I'll make money on. So 2022 is looking like it could be, please drive ahead. 2021 was a little bit of a down year for me, but again, it was because COVID hit me so hard in this area that I had to really start marketing. After not marketing for 6 months, that hit me pretty hard this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to take a left turn. As a child, who was the greatest single influence in your life?
Wow. That's an interesting question. I never thought of that one. I guess my brother. My father died when I was 8. I have a brother that's 11 years older than me. So he was probably the biggest influence in my life.
It kind of filled those shoes to a degree, I suspect,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. But the truth is, once I was 13, he was out of the house. But I guess he had the biggest influence. Well,
yeah. Well, talk to me about it seems like you made a transition, got into real estate. Have there been any, you know, challenges? And if so, what kind of challenges have you faced along the way finding your path to the success you're having today?
So, yeah, there were a lot of challenges, because when I got into this business and I had spoke and I had joined like a masterminds and talking to other people in other states, the things they were telling me just didn't apply in New York, right? So, for example, in New York, every contract that I go into had no contingencies. There's no inspection contingencies. When I go to contract, I'm going in hard. And that means for other people in other states, they were like, well, why don't you just have an inspection contingency? Because it's not done in New York. Yeah. Also, typical EMD, typical earnest money deposit you give on a contract here is 10%. In other places, it's 1% or $50 or nothing. So right. When I first got into the business and people were asking me for these things, and to me, it seemed normal. And then when I speak to people in all other 49 states, they look at me like I had three heads. Also, the amount of time it took, like people tell me to do a quick wholesale deal in a lot of places in 3 weeks.
Right.
For me, a quick wholesale deal is like 3 to 4 months. So realizing the differences between New York and every place else and how that works for me. And there are a lot of advantages that come with the differences, right? I have very little competition in New York, because most people that get into this business go online, you know, get a course from some guru and then try to do it in New York and they can't figure it out.
Correct.
Also, the fact that the price points are much higher in New York gives me a higher profit, right? I average probably over $35,000 per wholesale deal in New York. So
wow.
A lot more than in a lot of parts of the country.
Correct.
There's a lot of good and a lot of bad. It took me many years to realize what was different about New York, why some of those things are really good, why some of those things are challenging, and how to work within that and accept it, right? There was a period of time where I kept trying to change how I did to make it more like other states, but I would have such pushback from sellers and sellers' attorney that it was a foolish idea.
Yeah.
Right? And I have a competitor who tries to do that. They really, in a lot of ways, do things that are a very gray area of what's allowed and what's legal. And if they ever got in trouble, they'd have a tough time defending it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be in that position. I'm happy doing things the way everybody else here does, just understanding how that can work within my business.
Yeah. That's interesting. There's some uniqueness there associated with it.
It's very unique. And here's a good thing. So during COVID, when I really had nothing to do all day because I couldn't market for new deals and I couldn't sell the deals I had in my pipeline, I have a disposition manager who said, like, why don't you create a course that teaches how to do it? So I created a course that teaches how to do it. And I sold the course. Like, I got people paying for it and helping students. What's happened, not making so much money from the education, although it's been good, is that I've created these students who are going out and getting deals from me and bringing me deals. So I've got a bunch of JV deals this year. I didn't really have to pay for them. In fact, multiple people paid me to bring me the deal.
Bring me the deal.
It's been great. And I've gotten like four new people have gotten their first check, and it's been great. I feel great, you know, showing them how they can make money. I have a 19, dropped out of college. He already made $70,000 in 6 months. Like, it's amazing.
It's awesome.
It's life changing for them. And that I get a lot of joy from watching people get their first check in the business.
Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Thinking about adding people to your team now or in the next year? New and experienced investors alike are turning to the definitive book on hiring written by yours truly. It's called Unicorn Hunting for Real Estate Investment Companies. How to easily attract, screen, and land a unicorn. It's the complete hiring funnel. This book is a step-by-step process. It includes the secret sauce for attracting more applicants than you'll ever need, the exact resources to use along with screenshots, so it's easy to follow, how to accurately compensate the role and find candidates who will work for 15 to 30% less than the average wage in your home city. P.S. No, we're not shipping the jobs overseas. How to weed out applicants, including the exact word-for-word my team uses in our own business. Every single email needed for the entire process, it's all included. The screening tools used when interviewing, when to make the job offer. It's so easy that 90% of the work that goes into unicorn hunting can be done by someone else or a VA. This book retails on Amazon for $49.95. But since you listen here to Real Grit, I want to say thanks. I want to give you a free copy. I just ask that you cover the shipping handling. To get your free copy along with a few valuable bonuses I have not yet even mentioned, go to www.landaunicorn.com. That's www.landaunicorn.com right now to get your free book.
Talk to me about partners. So there's a number of people, you know, in the audience who either and certainly in this whole industry, they're, you know, have a partner, thinking about getting a partner, want to get a partner, have been through a breakup with a partner. So I guess, you know, you had a partner. How did you guys meet? How did you guys decide to get together in the front end? And then I'll follow up on that.
My partner worked for me in the mortgage business.
Okay.
He's much younger than me, but he worked together and he really had an amazing skill to go and out and raise money. So he brought something to the table that he was much better at than I was. And it's still a skill that he has that he's better at than me. He's great at raising money. And I didn't want to go out and raise money, and he did. And I probably would never started the business without him. So I owe him gratitude for that. Now, what happens in the end, and what I tell people before they go into partnership is it's very important that you clearly define what everybody is responsible for and understand that what you're responsible for is all you're going to be responsible for. So what happened after a while is that I started doing everything, right? And it wasn't really his fault. It wasn't that he was lazy. It's just that I live in the area that we operate. He lives a little further away. He'd get in later than me. He has little kids. My kids were older. And by the time he got in very often, most of the work was done. And he never really wanted to delineate duties. And, you know, people would ask us, you know, what do you do? What do you do? And he would always say, well, we do the same thing, which is not a good answer.
Right.
So I tell people, if you want to get into a partnership, there's a couple of things you need to know. First of all, 50-50 partnerships are the most likely to break up, right? Because it's almost never going to be 50-50, the separation of responsibilities. If one person's bringing the money, one person's doing all the work, eventually that person doing all the work is going to eventually say, I'm done with this guy because I can find the money somewhere else.
Right.
So it's really important. Like I know a lot of guys do partnership work and they, and like one guy does acquisitions, one guy does dispositions, for example.
Yep.
That's fine. As long as everybody understands that the other guy's contributions are as valuable as their percentage in it. But so in the beginning, when we had a partnership, we sort of would say how great it is that we can bounce ideas off each other. That's fine. But at some point, if one person is doing much more of the work, I couldn't stand, you know, I was closing deals where my partner didn't speak to the seller, know about the house or anything, and I'd give him 50% of the profit. And that can only last so long before you say, this has got to stop.
Right.
So partnerships are very tricky. I would only recommend going into partnership if you have some kind of deficiency in the business and the other person has clearly a strength in that area.
Yes.
And you can look at that going forward and say, even if business goes up 10x, I'm okay with him taking whatever percentage he has because he's willing to take that responsibility. Most people that I speak to, and I speak to a lot of students who are like, oh, I have this partner. Right. When I really get into it, I'm like, I got to be honest with you. You're not going to be happy or he's not going to be happy going forward if the business is successful. I don't think you should be partners. You can get whatever you're telling me he's bringing you, you can get that for a nominal fee. You can just outsource it, right? There's so many things we can do that we can outsource.
So many things, yes.
If your partner says he's going to make cold calls for you, that's not a value. That's not really a value. You pay somebody in the Philippines $4 an hour to do that.
Correct.
Partnerships are really tricky. It's not an easy thing. And when we broke up, you know, I told my partner, I go, I know it's not all your fault. I'm doing all this stuff and not letting you. I said, but you know, consciously or subconsciously, that if you don't do something, I'm going to do it.
Right.
I said, you need to break up and then go on your own and then you'll do all these things. And that's what happened. I think he's being very successful now too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like when a partnership's done right, you know, essentially 1 + 1 equals more than 2.
Correct.
It's the intent where it's a yin and yang, where somebody is the opposite of you. They can bring and deliver things that are not natural, that's not in your wheelhouse, and you the opposite of them.
Correct. And it's not in.
And it needs to be clear. You hit it on the head.
It has to be very clear, very clear. And I tell people, you're not thinking about what it's going to be like in a few years. Whether it's good or it's bad, whatever you or your partner bring has got to bring real value to the table.
Yeah. Yep. No, you're right. Especially on the way in. They don't think about what's a divorce of a marriage look like. No, right?
They just think, well, now I don't have to pay somebody $5,000 to do X. They're bringing it to the table. But I'm like, in 2 years, $5,000 might not be a big deal. And then you're going to think, what the hell did I give up equity in this company to a guy who I could have just wrote a check for $5,000?
Yeah. Yep. All right. So you've obviously learned a tremendous amount over the years. Knowing what you now know, what would you have done differently from the get-go in this industry?
So first of all, the biggest thing is I would have marketed direct to seller from day one, right? I wish I had spent 4 more years marketing. I'd probably have a much bigger pipeline now. That's a big deal, right? You know, people are
controlling the flow of leads and deal flow.
Sure, just building up the pipeline though, because deals happen years later, you know, if you're
following. Correct.
So that's number one. Number two, I probably would not have started with a partner and I would have found another way to raise money. That's probably what I would have done.
Yeah.
Or found a way to maybe, the truth is if I was marketing direct, see, I didn't even understand the concept of wholesaling. I only understood the concept of buying a property, you know, fixing and flipping it. So
right.
In our area, the average purchase price at that time even was like close to $300,000. So we needed money, right? Even with hard money, you're always going to be a gap. But I would have maybe figured out other ways to do it than giving up 50% of equity for years.
For years.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of dollars over a period of time.
Yeah.
Yep. No. Okay. Well, that's exciting. Let's do this. Let's transition to our final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
Let me get your favorite quote. I know you sent it to me here. Your favorite quote is, be who you are, say what you think, because the people that matter don't mind, and the people that mind don't matter.
I think it's Dr. Seuss, but I don't know who really said it. I don't know if that's the exact quote, but that's the idea. The idea is just be yourself, because anybody who is turned off by it is irrelevant, and anybody who is relevant is going to be attracted to it.
Yeah. What do you think holds most investors back from taking the action that's required of them to get to the next level?
So two things, it's fear and ignorance, right? They don't know what to do, or they know what to do, but they're afraid. And I talk to students all the time, and I sometimes have to explain to them, you know, you think, you're telling me you're afraid of somebody saying no to you, but really you're afraid of somebody saying yes to you. Mm-hmm. You're afraid what to do when a seller says, yeah, I want to sell your house, because you're afraid whether you're going to make a mistake, or you're afraid whether you're going to know if it's a deal. And it's fear is a big, big factor. Yeah.
How do you get over it? How does somebody get to the other side of that?
So I tell a lot of these students, you want to work with somebody like me or somebody else who knows what they're doing. And then I'm going to hold your hand and show you what a deal is, what a deal is or not. And the first few deals you may want to do with me. And I coach students and I don't require them to do deals. And I tell them, you can do deals any way you want. If you have the money, you know, you don't need me. You don't have to use me. But it's not easy in my area to know what a deal is, right? You know, people think when they get into this business that they're going to call people they're going to market to sellers and sellers going to tell them, I need to sell tomorrow for any price. And you're right. Going to just say, I'll give you $1. And they're going to say, no problem.
Right.
That's not what happens, right?
No.
Very often they have a number in mind. It might be an amount they owe. It might be an amount they need to move to somewhere else.
Right.
And in my area where there's a huge range of inventory, I just went to a house that was built in the 1700s.
Wow.
And then we had houses built in the 1990s. And it's hard to know if it's a deal or not. It's not so simple. Right? It's not so easy to comp out properties when you haven't done it before.
Right.
And it's not so easy to know really what you should be paying based on that. So
yeah.
I tell them, really work with somebody like me in the beginning, just so you get an idea how it works. And then it's basically a no risk situation. I'm going to put up all the money. I'm going to give you a percentage of the profits and you'll learn from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
My family. I just became I have one grandson from my oldest daughter and
congrats.
He just became 1 year old. I was in California for the birthday party last Sunday. So I'm passionate about that. It's good. Nice to be a grandparent. Grandkids are amazing. I highly recommend them. Really the best of having children without
that's right. That's what they say, right?
I'm passionate about that. I guess it's sort of real estate, but I'm passionate about helping people get into real estate by teaching them. Even if I'm not doing deals with them, just showing them how things work and watching their eyes open when they realize, that I'm able to help them.
That may lead me to the next question is what's your favorite way to make an impact on others and on the community?
Sure. So I'm very involved in my community, right? I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm in an area with a lot of Orthodox Jews. So I'm very involved with my synagogue and I'm trying to make an impact. Well, first of all, by helping people who need help in my area, but also helping people from all over who need help in real estate. So I have people in my office all the time.
Yeah.
I don't charge them for it. Very often they ask, do I owe you money? I won't take any money from them. I'm happy to help them. And I help people all the time. There's more advanced help if they want to pay. What I do have is I have people come to the office and will sort of work for me. They want to be mentored.
Yep.
So I tell them, I define mentorship as you coming basically to work for me for free in some kind of marketing capacity. If a deal comes from it, you'll get paid. And I just gave somebody a check for $7,000 on a deal that he sent some text on and got me the deal. And then you're going to learn, you're going to have access to me. So I'll mentor them and I'm happy to help people learn. And very often there's very, very few people that teach how this works in New York. Very few.
Yeah.
The truth is there's very few people who do it in New York, but sure. The people do it, don't really teach it. And some of them who teach it don't really understand how different it is than the other states. I have, I think, a unique viewpoint in that I know how it works in New York and I know how it works in other places. So
right.
I can sort of tell people, you may have heard this from a great guru who really was trying to help you,
right.
But it just doesn't apply here.
And just doesn't apply. And until you, like you have done, get in a room, surround yourself with a whole bunch of people like yous and me's from a whole bunch of different places and understand what's the difference from state to state.
Right.
And then how do you live it in your world? Right. No, that's terrific. If somebody wants to connect with you, they want to follow you, connect with you online, where can they find you?
So, I'm on Facebook at Michael Pinter or the name of my company, Real Property Buyers on Facebook. I'm on YouTube. My channel is called Flipping and Wholesaling in New York.
And we'll make sure we get all the links in the show notes.
My office number is there. You can call me in the office anytime, 516-209-2010. And I'm happy to help anybody who needs help.
Yeah. No, that's what I like about you. You are a giver. And that's how you and I originally connected, just trying to improve people and ourselves. And you're a big giver. So I appreciate you taking the time to connect up here and be on the show.
It's my pleasure, Neil. Thank you very much.
You bet. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.